Welcome to the podcast. My name is Liz Jansen, and my guest today is Nancy Savitar. Nancy comes from Charlotte Hall, Maryland, and was the AMA Motorcyclist of the Year in 2011 for her advocacy work in getting the lead law overturned. We're going to talk about that and what Nancy did to get that acclamation, and also, you know, how she did it and what we can do as individuals to make change. So, belated congratulations again, Nancy. It's still an honor. It's a great honor, and welcome.
Thank you very much. And it is an honor, and I definitely hold it close to me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's start a bit by talking about how you got into riding. Have you been, you know, what kind of riding do you do, and have you been riding for very long?
I got into riding through some friends about 20 years ago, and on and off I was riding and the dirt trails, mostly in Florida and Croom, and then met my fiance, and he raced professional motocross, and we went on the road together. I really didn't ride too much during that time, and then we got me a bike in 2000, and I started riding some more. Again, it's trails. I don't do motocross, don't have that kind of skill, but I enjoy watching it so much. It's been a huge part of my life in regards to watching others in their progression. And so I do a lot of trail riding. I still do trail riding more, actually, within the last 3 years than I've ever. It's crazy. I say I'm riding more in my 40s, which sounds nuts to me, I think. But I'm having such a blast. I've raced hare scrambles and everything, and it's just so much fun. So I'm having a great time still riding. Yeah. We do a little bit of dual sport riding, but for the majority, my riding is off-road trails.
Great. I've got news for you. I've been riding for more than 40 years, and I keep riding more and more every year. So you just have more of that to look forward to.
That's awesome.
Have you always been involved in advocacy? Because you really came into the limelight with this lead law thing. So have you been involved before this in advocacy?
Not so much in advocacy. I actually volunteered to help somebody that was running for Congress, and that had gotten me interested and more aware of how you can, you know, do things and how you can reach people and, you know, going into D.C. and doing things. I live about 40 minutes from Washington, D.C., and, you know, never really taking advantage of where I live and the fact that, you know, as a constituent, what, you know, is there something that concerns me and what can I do, you know, to let this person know? You know, a lot of people, I think you tend to just, you know, go about your business, live your life, and you don't really think about those people that, you know, you elect into office and what they can do for you, or, mm-hmm. you know, they don't know anything about you and how do things affect you? You know, they're supposed to know what they're supposed to represent you. So you need to make sure that they're representing you the way you want them to. So that's kind of how I learned that, you know, it's good to speak up, and it's and there's lots of opportunity to to contact people that can do things, you know, that need to know where you're at with issues like the lead law. So for me, it was a matter of this is going on. I live 40 minutes from Washington, D.C. What are the avenues that I can take? How can I be effective? Who can I contact? And it's almost, it's like a campaign.
Some of the people that are watching this will not be in the United States. So just very briefly, what's the lead law and what got you so hot about it?
So
the
lead law was a law that was put into place by good intentioned people. The Consumer Product Safety Commission, basically, they had come upon children that were having problems with lead poisoning because there were toys coming from China that had high traces of lead, and they were small toys, and because children could put them in their mouths, this is how they were getting sick from it. So when they tried to make a law to protect children. It was a blanket, and it covered a lot of things like books and bicycles and, you know, and motorcycles, and that were manufactured for children under the age of 12, because it was considered something that was made for a child. The lead law was going to, you know, has something to do with it. But the unfortunate thing is, I mean, well, everybody knows that most children aren't rolling around playing with their motorcycle, putting parts of motorcycle parts in their mouths. And so it was unfortunate. And it basically became a apparent that people needed to just speak up and say, hey, whoa, there's too many things that you're blanketing, and this doesn't make any sense, and we need to think, you know, more common sense wise. And, you know, that's the lead law. Then, you know, people started looking more into it and realizing that, yeah, there was, although it was well-intentioned, there were flaws in it. And people started getting involved and trying to make that apparent to people in D.C. that could, you know, effectively change the law.
Okay, so that would have meant the end of ATV and trail bike sales to children under 12, correct?
Right. There was even a time that the even parts that were manufactured for such bikes, ATVs, snowmobiles, dirt bikes, all these items, the parts were actually pulled off the counters. You couldn't go to your local dealership and, you know, get a part for a bike like that during a certain amount of time. And this was going to become forever. And that's right. What you're saying is right. That was the deal. Basically, if you wanted to buy this motorcycle, you wouldn't be able to, because it was made for a child, and that included all parts. It even included their gear.
So it would have had a huge impact on the industry. And, you know, I mean, that's stopping all the riders that are starting at a young age. So what got you hot to fight this?
Well, as my fiance, Billy, he had been riding all through his life since he was 6 years old. And I learned a lot about his involvement and his family and, you know, what they did. Although I had seen it, because I had been involved in motorcycling before I met him, and I knew lots of families, and I was in, you know, at the motocross tracks and saw everybody. You know, it's a family function, people bringing their motorhomes and just everything about it. Learning from him and his experiences and knowing him as the person he has become as an adult, you know, and just seeing that how all those experiences had shaped him. And like I said, he started racing when he was 6 years old, and, you know, almost every weekend is spent at the motocross track. And, you know, children are put in situations that a lot of kids wouldn't have that opportunity. I think it's phenomenal. I mean, they have to deal with many different organizations. They have to deal with people, you know, from other countries, you know, meeting them, and people come to America to race, and then the kids might go to another country to race. I mean, it's so vast, and I'm sure that there's many other sports where it's similar. You know, it's probably similar, but I'll take this sport because I know so much about it and lived it with him, and I know, like as I said, what kind of person he's become, and what kind of other people that I know have become, and how successful they are. What they learn in racing and dealing with people and the camaraderie and the fact that they get to spend time with their family and develop these relationships with people across state lines, across the country. And also the fact that kids have to, in order to race, they normally have to, you know, uphold a certain grade, you know, average. They have to do well in school to continue to do these things. It's just such a huge thing. And I could not imagine this being taken away. It would have changed everything. I mean, I cannot even imagine how it would have gone. And you think about, people think about the industry, people are going to think about the industry because that's their money. That's how they're making money. The dealerships are going to think about it one way, and the manufacturers are going to think about it the other way. And then the people that own racetracks are going to be hurt because, you know, there's going to be less people. But take all of that out of it and just think about, the bigger picture in the developmental person and how you would lose these people that really have gained so much through motorcycling. It's crazy. So for me, it was just like, this can't happen. What can I do?
So how can I spread the word? Okay, so what did you do?
So, well, I actually found out about it because I had read in an AMA email alert that this was going on. So I quickly contacted them because I saw they had a place in Washington and in D.C. And I said, what can I do? You know, I got with Jessica Irving. She worked at the AMA for government relations, and she explained to me some of the things that I could do. They made it very, very easy to get material. Like if I needed material for a if I needed material for a petition, they could supply it. If I needed a banner, if I needed, you know, a postcard, whatever it was they had, they were more than willing to give it to me. And so that I could, you know, basically go to work, you know, spread the word, put these things out. So that was my first thing, was getting information about what the lead law was, understanding it so that I could further explain it to other people that didn't know about it. And then the next step was I got on the phone to a lot of dealerships. I just took my phone book and started looking at who can I call and asking them, I'm sure you know about this, but if you don't, you know, and do you have this information? Do you have a petition on your parts counter? Do you need anything? You know, here's a number. Can I connect you with, you know, Jessica Irving at the AMA? It was just those little things. And some people were really eager to help and get involved. Some people acted like it wasn't an issue, which was really frustrating. And you know, and then other people, they didn't know. And they were like, whoa, what's going on? And they really got involved. It seemed like more of the people that hadn't heard about it really stepped forward right away, more eager, I think, because it was like a shock. Like, oh my gosh, like I didn't really understand. So that's how it started for me, just contacting people, obviously contacting everyone I knew personally, but then also stepping out and going to places that, you know, I knew, you know, people, you know, the Harley shop, you know, yeah, we're not dirt bikers, you know, that kind of thing. I understood that, but they were still so willing to get involved. You know, it's just the motorcycling community as a whole came together, and there, you know, we only are talking about me, the one person, but there was a vast amount of, you know, thousands of people, if you think about, across the country doing their little things. And it's just all these little things that we all did came together.
So when you talk about what you did, was what you did mostly localized, or did that have a ripple effect then across the country? Because after all, the AMA singled you out, so you had a major role.
Well, I did contact a lot of people outside of my local area through social media. I was, whenever I could, I was online, putting links and sharing and I was basically doing these things and keeping in contact with the AMA, letting them know, hey, I did this, and you might get a call from this person, and, you know, here's an idea, how about that, you know, just trying to work together. And I don't know if maybe I was just contacting them so much about these things and letting them know, but my intention was to let them know, so whatever I was learning, they would have that information, and if they got anything new, because it was so fluid, everything was always changing, mm-hmm. that they could let me know what was going on. So if we could learn anything from this, it's communication. You know, I made sure that I shared the information. I went to pages of people and places and shared things. And a lot of people maybe don't have the time to do that. You know, we can't just be doing that all the time. But whenever I could, I did it. And I was just really vocal about it. And I also wrote in my paper to the, you know, the local editor, like, this is going on, you know, and you can do that. And maybe a lot of people don't really think about that, you know, what can I do? Or so these were things that I learned, you know, throughout, like I say, like a campaign. People are going to want to reach out to your community. Well, you can write a letter to your editor in the local newspaper. And again, sharing, I mean, this social media, it's insane what you can do.
It's powerful. This law was already signed. right? It's not usual for a law to be overturned.
Yes,
or
it
repealed
was,
or whatever the term is that you use.
It was signed into law, and then there was a stay because I guess there was a, you know, people got together from different organizations and said you need to look more further into this. And so they did a temporary stay. And I think during the temporary stay, when things kind of felt normal, people started to, you know, get complacent and think it's kind of gone away. And you know, at first when it all went down in 2008, there were a lot more people doing things more vocally. And then when the stay came, as I said, I think people just kind of got a little bit more lax. Like it wasn't out there all the time. And the way I looked at it was, if you have a website and you're in the industry, if you have a TV program, if you have a race, if you have anything, and this is going on, this should have been something that was talked about, you know, more out there. Because even though you may know, and the people in the industry know, and the people that are racing know, man, there could be, you know, hundreds of other people that really don't know because they're not in it all the time, but they would support you. They would, you know, they watch the races. They enjoy motorcycling. Even if they don't do it themselves, they know someone or they have a grandkid. I mean, it was such a huge thing that people needed to know about. And unless you were involved in it, it seemed like a lot of people didn't know about it. And so if we could learn anything, it's the communication. Let's make sure that we're getting important things out to the public. You know, we do have, you know, all these resources and we should use them wisely.
And just because somebody isn't a motorcyclist doesn't mean, I mean, this was a rights, you know, how bills, you know, how laws come into being that are maybe not thought out or not, you know, everything hasn't been considered. I mean, this maybe, so this happened with motorcycling, but it can happen with anything.
Oh yeah, it can happen with anything, and a lot of times with one small ripple is a huge wave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think a lot of people don't think too far down. You know, they're just trying to make a focus change right now because they feel that that's the right thing to do.
Sure.
But you have to take a moment, you know, or more moments and congregate with people and figure it out a little bit better, think it through better, and really think about the after effects and how these small things can lead into huge things later and destroy your freedoms. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one step away. We're always one step away from even more, you know, more freedom taking.
What's the turning point? What was the turning point in getting that lead law repealed?
Well, I think when the AMA put together the Capitol Hill climb that they had scheduled they called it the Capitol Hill climb, and they asked everyone, you know, that could to come and, you know, bring the kids and bring them, have them dressed in their motorcycle gear and go talk to your, you know, your representative. And they really had it so set up so well ahead of time. You know, they asked people to register so that they can make sure that you knew who your representative was. And they had it all figured out because you have to set up an appointment. So there were real appointments made with real individuals and the families came. Some people came from Colorado. I mean, it was a huge deal. It was that important that kids were taken out of school to go meet their representative. I mean, what a great field trip, you know. Mm-hmm. And when we had, you know, so many kids running, I mean, they were just in the halls of Congress. It was insane. The colors, you know, just everybody in their gear, kids, you know, just so rambunctious. And they're like, this is insane. And I'm going to meet, you know, my representative and, you know, make sure he knows that I don't eat my dirt bike and, you know, all these things. I mean, it was really cool. And I really think that their presence there really made a big impact. I mean, to put together such an amazing package of people in one place and the colors and the, and just the community of it, it really put a better face on it. It's not some, you know, people running through the streets with dirt bikes, popping wheelies and, you know, no helmets. It's not this like unorganized, just chaos. It's real people, real families, real kids that this is their sport, this is their hobby, this is their dream, and they don't want to see it end. And it really put that picture. I think the AMA had a huge deal with that and setting it up and making sure, and then people talking about this function and knowing, like, one of the things that I really felt strongly about was I wanted to make sure I could tell so many people that I could around me, because we're local. I considered us local. Not everyone can come from California and all these places. Let's try to do the best we can to represent them, to make it, you know, if they couldn't come, let's make sure we can come. We're only, you know, this far away. Let's do what we can to make a big showing. And there was a lot of people doing that. So it was really a great function. And I think that's what turned it.
You were running up against a deadline. And how long were you involved until, the final decision was made?
I stayed involved. I really started getting involved in February 2011. I knew about it, like, all during 2008, and I talked about it a little bit because I just said, that's crazy, you know, and you just never think it's really going to happen. But then when I started getting all those emails, like I said, the AMA did a really great job of making it people aware. And the one thing, I mean, I just stayed in it all the way through. And I knew that the one thing that I had never known, but I learned through this whole ordeal, was that people that are members of the AMA, they don't just get email alerts. They have to sign up for them.
Good point.
And the American Motorcycle Association doesn't want to bombard people with things that they may not have a use for, or they might find, you know, I don't care, I don't want to know about all these things. So
yeah, just let me ride.
Right, you know, or I need an AMA membership because I race, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people, even though it was this many members, 200 some thousand members, it wasn't 200 some thousand members getting these alerts.
Right.
So think about all the people that really didn't know, and what was done with who did know. And it was just a matter of everybody staying, making sure, like I said, I'll just say it over and over again. It's communication. That's the bottom line. If people didn't communicate, if people don't talk about what's going on, you cannot expect everyone to know what you know.